and welcome back to Up the Villa podcast. This is our tactical debrief for Brighton 1, Aston Villa 0. If you're new around here, make sure you are subscribing. Smash a like on this episode and comment your thoughts down below. Joined by Justin. We are recording this on Sunday, so it's going to go out on Monday. And we've got, I'm going to chat with my mate over a nice little glass of red wine. So yes. we're gonna have a nice little chat about the Villa. Yesterday or today, sorry, what day is it? I haven't checked that much. So yeah, today is Sunday. Recording this a day in advance for it going out. My match reaction, I was very down, and I think it's a culmination of mental fatigue from my part from this season, because as you all know, I am heavily, heavily invested in this football club. And I know we do a lot of episodes, and I pretty much do an episode every single day. So I live and breathe, like you all at home, this football club. And I get that wrapped up in it emotionally that after that match reaction, I just felt drained, and I just felt so flat of, you know, what's at stake still for this season. So that's why I was really flat, and I really struggled to do that episode, because I just couldn't find anything to talk about. And yeah, that's just the beauty of doing an instant match reaction, is that you get my raw reaction to a football match. And just like fan cams, you get that raw emotion. And then the tactical debrief, where we deep dive a little bit further, we get more of a bit of a balance, a bit of a level-headed. You've had your time to think. But both reactions are very good and sometimes very entertaining. So, yeah, I was very flat. I can tell you right now that my moods... Hold on, what time is it? So, yeah, so my mood after kickoff now... So it's about 3 hours after the game, full time, that I'm feeling loads better. So, you know, that's just the way I'm feeling. Justin, how are you feeling, and your thoughts on the game?
I'm feeling great. Genuinely great. And that's not based on the result and the performance of Aston Villa Brighton. Because if it was solely about that, I'd be feeling a bit miserable. But as always, I like to take a step back and look at the bigger picture. And I think it's important to do that when you lose. Probably more important to do that when you lose, because you can lose yourself in the perspective of a performance on any given day and lose sight of the bigger picture of what has happened this season. And that's how I'm feeling about this game, you know. Quite frankly, and I said to you just before we came on, I couldn't give a toss about the Brighton result, because what the whole season has led to is where we are at and what we are now tantalisingly close to confirming, and that's what I think all it is now. I think it's just confirming that top four place. Is what it's all been about, is that. And regardless of results recently and performances recently, our season has been sensational. Absolutely, categorically, undeniably sensational. Football, I think, to me, is the soundtrack to my life. Now, a lot of people get that from music. You know, they look at things. You know, I remember that song, that album coming out, and that was that summer and that year. Football's that for me. And this season has been arguably the best I can remember, honestly. And I know a lot of people have been on this journey with us. And like you, I live, breathe and eat everything to do with Aston Villa Football Club. And I know people know personally it's been a really bad year for me. But Aston Villa has been there in my darkest hour this year. And this season has been incredible. I couldn't have wished and hoped for a better few months watching the team I've loved all my life, and it's culminating in a phenomenal end to the season.
Yeah, I echo everything you say, mate. You know, and I think and I think it's important maybe to talk about our rival this season. You know, our biggest rival this season is Spurs. You know, they're the ones that are competing with us now for our objective of getting top four. And I think after that game against Brighton, you know, I wasn't ranting, I wasn't raving, I wasn't angry. I felt more sort of like not sorry for ourselves, but a bit more sorry because I just felt like, you know, our injuries and etc. catching up and stuff, and then we had another injury, and I just felt like, okay, yeah, that was flat. But then when I look at what our rival is doing, you know, our rival is getting smashed against Newcastle. It's then got beat against Arsenal. It's then got beat against Chelsea. It's then got smashed against Liverpool. And we're currently 7 points clear of Spurs. Now, for Spurs to get Champions League, you know, they have got to beat Burnley, beat Man City, and beat Sheffield United, while Villa don't pick up any more points. And even if they beat City and then go and beat Burnley before they play their last game of the season, they will be physically behind Aston Villa going into that last game of the season. So it's in our hands. We have to maybe hope that City beat them. And then if they do, it's done and dusted with a game to go because they can't catch us because they'll be what? How many points will there be on? If they get a point.
7 points at the moment with three to play. So if they.
So there'll be three, the there'll be three behind us.
Yeah.
So if they win
the next one, which we. Yeah. We think they'll win the next one because it's Burnley, isn't it?
Yeah.
Burnley on the 11th, and then it's the Man City game. So if they beat Burnley, they'll be 4 points behind us. So if they get a point against City, they'll be 3 points behind us. But with the goal difference swings, now they're plus 20. We're plus 20, they're plus 11. So there's a 9-goal shift there. So effectively, that's another point. So that, I think, takes the draw out of the question now for City against City. They have to now beat all three. They have to win all three games, basically, without us picking another point up. So if they were in better form, I'd probably argue that there was a chance. And anybody can beat anybody in the day. I get that. I totally understand it. But their form is terrible. They're even seeing players, you know, arguing between themselves now. So I think it's going to be a big ask for them. And given that City very rarely lose these tight run-ins when they know they have to win all the games as well, and they're in good form now, then, you know, I know fans get jittery when you know, they don't like to say it because it's tempting fight and all that. But I think I'm past that now. I think, you know, I think fourth's there. I do, really. And yeah, if it doesn't happen, it's because they're an absolute ridiculous run of results. You know, and I know it's silly season, and this is results end of the season, and this is why it doesn't really matter. We lost ultimately to Brighton because results don't have to always be your results that are key factors in these end of season games. You know, 3-4 games ago, as we saw in the Championship yesterday. You know, promotion and relegation. You have to do your job. Yes, that's the ideal way to do it, is to just take care of your own business. But, you know, unless other teams capitalise on and your points dropping, which, you know, we have dropped a few points recently, unless Spurs have capitalised on that, then it's irrelevant what we do. You know, we are in the box seat. And the reason we're in the box seat is because we've had a bloody good season.
Yeah.
That's what we've had a bloody good season and we've put ourselves in a bloody good position to finish fourth.
Yeah. The other good thing about it is as well is that Emery always mentions that be consistent. And then that is why we are in this position that we are in. And going into that running, you know, the Spurs aren't consistent and they're not going to be consistent going into the last three games by picking up points in every single game that they play. You know, so you don't go on a 4-game losing run and then go on a 3-game getting results. So, yeah, I just wanted to touch on that. So the game in itself, Justin, what were your thoughts watching us?
I went into it confident, positive. Yes, I know our form's been iffy lately, and I think, you know, the result on Thursday was a big kick in the teeth for us mentally. But I've said it for a couple of weeks now, I think minimum, probably a bit longer now, that you can see we're running on empty. You just can see it. It's not rocket science. I do feel a bit sorry for the players. I do feel sorry for the manager, because everything they've put into this season is culminating in this bit of a damp squib ending. But, you know, it shouldn't. And I can't emphasise this enough to every single Villa fan that's not happy with the result. And there's nothing wrong with being not happy with that performance and result. It was crap. And every single player would say that it's crap. We were shit. We didn't turn up. Everything went wrong. Man for man, they were better than us, you know, with half a team out. But you know, we've got to be very clear on the fact that we are where we are because of a really, really rough season with lots of factors. And it's ended up with us getting to the end of the season and running out of steam. You know, you can see mentally the fatigue. I've said it a couple of times. I feel mentally and physically fatigued watching this team over the last few weeks, Thursday, Sunday. You know, trying to work out what we need here. We need the result there. The penalty shootout was draining. You know, in the next game, we've got two-legged fair home first. Oh, God, what happens if it goes wrong? It did go wrong. Oh, God, we've dropped points against them. We need points. And then it's not only us. You're then going, oh, I hope Spurs lose. You're watching that game. It is mentally draining. So how do they feel, the players? You know, we're down to really two centre midfielders when we've, at our peak, it's our best this season. Our best team, I still think, out. When we put it out, when everybody's fit, is Kamara, Luiz, McGinn and Tielemans. And that gives us that really strong midfield. And I felt a lot lately, I sit by Dave and we talk about this at the games. And I feel we've just relinquished control of our midfield in lots of these games. We've seen lots of teams now, possession-wise, having loads more possession than us. Not only that, they've controlled the game better than us. We saw it with Lille twice. We saw it with Olympiacos. We saw it with Chelsea. We saw it today with Brighton. You know, we've just relinquishing control of games. We're not our usual fluid self. We're not passing the ball that well. You know, the first touch has gone astray. Players' form's dropped. And that's football, and that's why we love it so much, because these things are all culminating in, unfortunately, our form dropping off the cliff, and that's what happens. But luckily for us, the preceding 30-odd games that we had before that were that good that we were in a fantastic position to allow us to have this drop-off at the end through no fault of their own, because we know the levels these players can get to now. We know what they're capable of, and this isn't the Villa that we've grown to love over the next few months. And they get a million percent pass off me. That's what they get off me because of what they've given me this season and what's going to happen over the next few seasons.
Yeah, so we will go a bit in depth now and just look at the performance. Like there's not a great deal to look at, but you've made a spot on observation, and it's to do with the midfield. So what I would mention about the midfield is, and I'll show you this with numbers, because I don't know these numbers that are coming up, but I imagine when I show these numbers on screen, they will back up. Fingers crossed they'll back up what I'm going to say. So this was Aston Villa's average positions from the game against Brighton. Now, as you can see, tactically, it's very narrow. Now, I think it's narrow on purpose because we wanted to stop the Brighton midfield getting on the ball. So we were asking Bailey and Rodgers to come inside and block off those passing lanes, which is fine. So I imagine that's why it looked like this. Where's it gone? Right, here we go. It's auto-refreshed. Right, so let's go back here. Right, so you'll see it. It's very, very narrow, which is fine because I think that's a tactical ploy on Emery's side. Now, what we've got is a double pivot here, which, again, anyone watched the match preview would have known that I said I want John McGinn to stay at home more. The right back being Konsa is fine because we had a bit more stability in there. Yeah, he was getting done by their wide player who had a really good game, but all in all, that is fine. Now, what happens, like Justin mentioned, because we've not got Kamara, who would be sitting there, you'd have Luiz there, you would then have Tielemans here, you then have McGinn on that right-hand side. Those are four players that all look after the ball very, very well. What Villa are doing at the minute is we are playing with Bailey, Diaby, Watkins and Rodgers, who during a game, their passing accuracy is always going to be a lot lower because they play more risks. They are sometimes off the cuff a little bit. You know, they're trying to beat a man. And they're not predominantly players that retain the ball very, very well. So what's happening is because we've only got four at the back and two midfielders, and the other creative options that we got are very, very attacking, what it means is we're not able to keep the ball as much. And that's something that I've noticed. So if we go now and probably have a look at these numbers, and hopefully they're going to back up what I say here. So we've got Diego Carlos passing accuracy, 85. Douglas Luiz, 86, which is what we'd expect. That even those are a little bit low. Luka Dean, 82. Cash, 80. Diaby, 58. Rodgers, 75. Watkins, 85. We've then got John McGinn, 88. Leon Bailey, 80%. So because we've got those players that aren't looking after the ball as well as the midfielders and the defenders, that's where I think we are turning over the ball quite a lot. Watkins had an unbelievable game against Bournemouth where his hold-up play was absolutely unbelievable. But in the last two games against Chelsea and Brighton, that hold-up play is not quite there. That link-up play is not quite there. So again, we're turning over the ball and we're losing the ball and then it's coming back at us just as quick. So those are some of the things that I've noticed. I mean, some of the duels, they're not too bad. Pau, 4-1 out of 9. Watkins, 7 out of 13. Cash, 4 out of 7. Luka Dean, 4 out of 5. Luiz, 3 out of 6. So those aren't actually... McGinn was quite low. You know, we'd really want that to be a lot higher. 4 out of 11. Bailey, 5 out of 12. So those are some of like the fine margins that I would say I've picked up on the recent performances, because we're playing like four attackers and the rest are like defenders that are mopping up. You know, we'll have a look at Brighton's average positions. You know, it's a little bit more expansive. There's more width there, a little bit narrow, but they've also got width with number 24 who had a really, really good game. And, you know, they were looking for that ball over the top, over Konsa. So, yeah, I think that's where I saw the game. And that's where I saw it going. And you know, if I look at the passing accuracy, both teams, 86%. They had 481, 439. I don't think they were that great either, to be fair. I thought they were pretty average, to be fair, really. But, you know, they did create a little bit more. And they were the more threatening side. So... do you want to pick up on anything that I've just mentioned?
I always remember years and years ago that Graham Taylor saying something, and it always stuck with me that players always become better when they're out of the team. You know, fans always, you know, make players better than they are when they're not playing. Oh, if only so-and-so was playing, we'd have won that game. And you know, that might be the case, but you're never going to know, are you? But I think one thing that I've come to realise, you always miss important players when they're out. I get that. You know, we've got some very important players out. But I think the key injury for me this season was Boubacar Kamara. Yeah. And I think we've seen a gradual drop off of form. And it wasn't like it fell off quickly, but I think over time, missing him has really affected this team to the point of where we are now. Because I think him playing the role he does in this team, I'm not going to say it's the most important role and he's the most important player because we've got so many really good players now. But the role that he does in the team affects the team in such a way that it's affected a lot of players. And what I mean by that is Douglas Luiz's form has dropped off recently quite a lot, alarmingly quite a lot. And I think that what Kamara allows him to do when he's playing is to pick up the role of a more of a box-to-box eight, if you like. I know he plays in the six, but he likes to get forward and get involved. But when Kamara's next to him, he knows he's got that added security of somebody that's a very good player at picking, you know, picking up runners and putting a block in and tackling and laying the ball off to him. And what we noticed a lot when Kamara was playing was when we played this sort of false right-back, he would drop in and pick up a third centre-half position, almost the right-back position. and that's not happened because he's not playing there. It's made, you know, John McGinn having to play in a deeper role, which is not his natural position. I think he's good at doing it. I think he can do it, but I think we've seen over time when he's having to play it week in, week out over a prolonged period, then our form drops because, you know, we lose him in an area where I think he's better, a bit further forward. And then by default, because of the players we've got missing, the amount of players we've now got missing, is that we've got arguably 13, 14 players now that are playing, you know, a starting 11 and three off the bench every game now, it's generally been, is that we're having to play the four attackers, essentially. So it's turned in, you know, our formation's gone from a four sort of in the middle, but that sort of asymmetric four with two attackers, with Watkins and AN other, is now these four players that are attackers that are not natural defenders or midfielders. And they're so isolated. You know, we've seen Ollie Watkins barely get any service now for three or four games. You know, I feel sorry for the bloke. I think a graphic came up just before half time. He had about four touches of the ball. And that's not his fault. He's had the season of his life, probably the best season he's ever had. You know, England definitely in the summer. But he's suffering because of the way we're having to play. And then the players that are playing in behind, forget the Rodgers injury. You know, Rodgers has been brilliant. But if you can't control the ball and possession and have the ball a lot, which we are very used to doing now, then these players suffer. And then when they do get really sparse possession, and they see it very rarely, the ball, that they're under that much pressure to get hold of it and keep hold of it, that it's you know, they get frustrated. And you see that the flicks and the tricks and the turns, that, you know, that they stop doing those because the confidence is drained away. And then they're in the mentality of, oh shit, I need to really, really look after the ball, and they'll lose it. And then, oh. So it's sort of a vicious circle of what's happened to us. And then adding to that, the long run we've had in Europe, you know, let's not be wrong. We're basically in the last week of the season now, and we're fourth in the league and still in Europe. And we've played I think the stat is we've played 15 more games than Spurs this season. And we're 7 points ahead of them, still in Europe. So as I've said multiple times in this pod, and people are getting pissed off with me, I apologise. I give this team 1,000,000% pass of what's happening recently.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
they're human at the end of the day, and they are struggling, and you can see they're struggling mentally and physically.
Yeah, I think it's not excuse making, because Unai doesn't want excuses, and I think that's fine to be like that, but at times there has to become a realization of the reality of what's right in front of you. And it's sort of sometimes like we don't do excuses, but you can't kid yourself the reality of what's happened. You know, it's like, I think it's okay to have the no excuses, like a couple of months ago when, like, there's still so much to play for. But when we get to this stage now, like, it's plain to see, like some of the things that I've read and I've seen, you know, especially off Twitter, the reaction after this game is absolutely mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling, you know, what I've been reading. And I think, like, come on, like, get with it. Like, you know, then I'm seeing stuff like, oh, well, if we get in the Champions League anyway, what's the point? Because we're going to be playing, we can't even beat Olympiacos, and we can't even beat. And I'm like, yeah, but are we not going to sign players in the summer? Are we not going to improve? Are players not going to leave? Like, players are going to leave this team in the summer. Players are going to come into this team and improve this squad. We don't go into next season with the same squad. So I just think, yeah, there's got to be like a realisation of like where we are and what's happening.
I also think to put a bit more clarity on what I'm saying, I'm not giving them a pass and saying I don't care that we didn't turn up today, and I don't care that we lost and we were crap, because I know for a fact that Unai Emery will be analysing this game to within an inch of his life, and he will feed back to the players a detailed hour or two, sit down, second on the telly, going through every single aspect of what he felt, how they went wrong, how they lost that game, what they could have done better, because that's what he does. I'm merely saying that I forgive them because of what's led to this point and where they are in the league and everything they're about to put up with. You know, professional wise, it was shit, and they know it was crap, and the manager will assess it, and he will deal with it, and he'll go through each individual player, and he'll say, "You didn't do that right. You didn't do that right." But what he won't do is hang them out to dry in public, because he knows that squad is giving him every ounce of effort. And I can't say this about a lot of teams over the years with Villa, but they can't do any more than they've done. They are done. They are spent. You can see it in their body language. You can see the way they walk around and run around the pitch. They need a break. They've had it. And we've got three, possibly four games left. And if we do somehow get through on Thursday, which I'm still hopeful we can rouse ourselves to have one last hurrah at it and have a real Hail Mary, let's just go for it on Thursday. If we do somehow manage to get through that game, then I would happily play the kids in the last two games and get everybody 2 weeks off and get them ready for what could be a monumental final in Athens. That's still in my head. That's how I would attack it now, honestly. And that still is a possibility, a very good possibility of happening.
Yeah, well, I think Martinez might be back for Thursday. Tielemans, I'm not sure. Zaniolo may be back as well, which is a positive. A couple of episodes ago, I spoke about Emery having a bit of like being annoyed by the questions. And there's been a fantastic interview on Sky with Emery. And another ridiculous question got asked to him. And I wrote it down. I wrote what Emery said. All right, so this is what he got asked. The past three results, this was the interviewer. The past three results, Chelsea, Olympiacos, and now Brighton. And Emery goes, no, 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 no negative, positive. I am going to remind you and for everybody, okay, you ask me about the last month's matches. Okay, Arsenal, we won. During the season, at home, we won a lot of matches. You can ask me anything. I only want to respond positive things. And I just love him. I absolutely love him. Like, I would literally run through a brick wall for this man. And that's me as a fan. Like, I'd run through it for him. I'd do anything for him because I think he's unbelievable. And I just love his mindset of being positive. And you guys know me. Maybe if you watched the match reaction, you probably would have thought I was that positive. But, you know, I weren't negative. But, you know, I'm always positive. I always look for the best. And Emery does the same. And I just love that attribute from him. So it was absolutely fantastic. So I think we've got through everything that I wanted to talk about without sort of getting to the actual topics. The final topic that I would like to talk to you about, Justin, are our neighbours down the road. Let's end on something from Justin's thoughts on our neighbours from down the road. How do you think it's gone for them?
I'm trying to think, do I be diplomatic here or not? look, I don't lose any sleep about Small Heath. I never have done. They're an insignificance to most Villa fans, and they are to me. I always have a pang of sadness for any team that gets relegated. And that's only because, you know, where I work, I've got a really nice lady that comes in most days and has a lunch with me. Not with me, but in the shop. And she's a big Blues fan. And she's a lovely lady.
I was going to say, really, can you book in for that service?
Yeah, lunch with Justin. She's lovely. She's been really positive and complimentary about Villa this season. We've had some really nice footballing chats. We're on pretty much the same wavelength when it comes to our football, how we enjoy it, the length of time we followed our respective clubs. She was peed off when they sacked Eustace. She hated Rooney. So a lot of the things that, you know, that you would expect. And she came in today and I said, look, I'm really sorry you get relegated. I'm not going to lose any sleep about you getting relegated. And I hope you stay down there for quite a few years. I said, but I feel sorry for you as a real, loyal, hardcore fan. it's not nice, you know, we've been through it, but ultimately I don't care. They got relegated. I'm happy they got relegated, to be honest. You know, I think they deserve it. I'm lucky enough to have known John Eustace for a long time now. And when he got the job there, he's such a nice bloke. Even I couldn't sort of say anything to him. And when they fired him, I texted him and I said, I can't believe they've done that to you. And that's what's cost them, you know, daft ownership. Yeah, don't care. Glad they're down. See you later, Blues.
I'd probably say that's the first ever time I've seen a team get relegated and invade the pitch.
Yeah.
I just find it a bit bizarre, really, that's what they did. But, yeah, so they're now in the, what is it, the second or third? It's third tier. Is it called?
I think somebody said something quite interesting. Mark, I'll give him a shout out. You know, Mark. He said they're closer now to Tamworth than they are to Villa in rankings.
And they are also probably going to get to play Villa next season in the Papa John's Trophy. So
yeah, that's our under-21s can give them a tightering.
That's another positive for them. So yeah, so my mood's better. I feel loads better now. And I feel a lot more positive about the picture. We will be doing our Olympiacos preview. That will be out on Tuesday. So that'll be out on Tuesday. And yes, so cheers everyone for watching. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Up the Villa.
Keep the faith. Up the Udi.